The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with Tampa Tom, who says one thing will be his biggest challenge this year. It isn't what we expected. You're going to hear it from him. Plus, remember this guy? You'll hear what Big Ben's coach said that should mean big things for the Steelers this fall. And then Tiger Woods finds a way to hold together a tough round. I'll tell you why you should be very encouraged by what you saw as we get up with you, starting right now. On a Friday from Bristol, Mike Greenberg here. Delighted you've chosen to get up with us. Those of you watching KBO Action can tune over to ESPN2, where the game will conclude there. Meanwhile, we begin this morning with a lot of football still on the way with our game of the night from the NBA bubble last night, and the stars were out as usual. Let's put the spotlight on Luka Doncic and the Mavs taking on the Clippers. Pick it up in the second quarter. Good game. Mavs up three. And I want you to watch the no-look dish right here. That's Luka to Kristaps Porzingis. And as we take another look at it with the ESPN axis, you got three Clipper defenders all drawn to Luka. He dishes it off to his big teammate running the floor in a big way. Porzingis, the slam. Luka, 29 points, 6 assists. Under a minute to go in the half. Clippers are down two. Kawhi Leonard, the ISO on Luka. Oh, you can't stop this. Kawhi, three threes in the first half, 17 in the first half. Clippers up one. At halftime, third quarter now. Clippers starting to pull away. And, oh, it's Zubats. Look at him slamming it home off a nice feed from Paul George. Zubats, 21 points, 15 rebounds, 10 of 10 from the floor. Clippers start to pull away. Fourth quarter now. Mavs down by 8. And take a look at the range from Kristaps. Oh, Porzingis from way downtown. Mavs within 5. If you're a fan of the Knicks, just avert your eyes. Don't watch this. Porzingis, 30 points, 9 rebounds. Mavs get within 2, but they would get no closer. Under 6 to play. Clippers up a deuce. Kawhi, yes, 29 points, 6 boards, 5 assists. Clippers pull away. They win it 126-111. And our graphic, our BPI, our basketball power index, says there's an 89% chance that the Clippers will face the Mavericks in the first round of the playoffs. So this matchup here, it's good news for the Clips. They're 3-0 against Dallas this year, and they won the other two by 15 points. To the NFL, let's talk about Tom Brady. He may be 43 years old. He may have over 2 decades of training camp experience, and he may be the greatest quarterback of all time. But there are still plenty of things to learn about his new offense. Here was Brady yesterday on the challenges he's experiencing as he adjusts to being Tampa Tom.
It's been different having the opportunity, you know, over this time to, you know, move and then to, you know, for example, study my playbook. I mean, I really haven't had to do that in 19 years. So, you know, you forget, man, that's really tough. Like all the different terminologies and, you know, you're going back a very long time in my career to, you know, to really have to put the mental energy in like I did.
So it's been a long time since he's had to do that. And here is my squad for the morning. Look at Damian Woody looking great this morning. Foxy is with us this morning, and Mike Tannenbaum. Why are you shaking your head there, Dominique Foxworth?
I mean, this is the first time I'm seeing D. Wood in a long time, and man's looking kind of svelte there. I'm a little jealous.
He does look awful good.
You're quarantine doing all right.
Right.
Doing all right.
You know what he is? He was inspired by Tom Brady. You pop up a shot of Tom Brady, and everybody needs to look their best. So, D. Wood, let's start by talking about your former teammate, your former quarterback. You were there when he was just starting out. And how similar is this now? 20 years into his career, he's learning a new offense. How big a deal is that?
Well, Greeny, listen, in a truncated offseason, it's a really big deal. But I go back to my time in 2008 when Brett Favre was traded. You know, it's a similar situation. You know, Brett Favre got traded in training camp. And what we basically try to do, instead of Brett Favre learning our offense, we learned Brett Favre's West Coast offense. And the first few games was a little rough because Brett Favre was basically drawing things up in the dirt and trying to translate our offense to the West Coast to get everybody on the same page. But once we got rolling, I mean, there was a stretch where we played at Foxborough, won at Tennessee, Titans in consecutive weeks and won. we were rolling offensively, and if it wasn't for the hurt elbow, who knows what could have happened that year.
So you put it together around him. If only we had the man who actually made that trade for Brett Favre with us today. Oh, we do. It's Mike Tannenbaum, who was the general manager of the Jets then. Take us through that thinking there on that when you brought him in. And in that case, for those who remember, that trade was made in August. Brady signs here in March. Now, this has been an offseason like unlike any other. But that trade was made in August. Take us back to how you guys worked to acclimate him.
Yeah, and first of all, if you guys think D. Wood looks good today, in 08, it was even a better version of D. Wood. So we appreciate your contributions back then. But I would say this. I agree with D. Wood. We blended offenses because Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator now of Seattle, was our offensive coordinator then. Brian Daboll, who's now the offensive coordinator in Buffalo, was our quarterback coach. And Mike Holmgren, as D. Wood alluded to, there was a lot of his offense going back to his West Coast days, and it was a blending of all those things. And I thought one of the things we did creatively, the coaches implemented some of the offense through a crossword puzzle because we knew that Brett Favre liked crossword puzzles, and we want to keep things fresh and keep him engaged with things. So there was a lot of creativity, there was a lot of blending, and we had a really good result. And going behind the scenes with Tampa Bay, I know that's one of the things they're working on right now is, again, no off-season program, no joint practices, no preseason games. They're going to have to do a lot of the same things so they have the best chance to be successful early in the season.
Trying to picture what a crossword puzzle to learn the offense. Like 17 across is down and in? I don't know exactly how that would work. But Dominique, at the end of the day, how much a factor is this? You got Brady trying to learn a new offense in an unusual circumstance. How much of a factor is this going to be for the Buccaneers as their season begins?
Yeah, I don't see it being a big factor at all. I think the least thing that you have to worry about with a veteran like Tom Brady, a smart player too like Tom Brady, I'd say one of the differences between Tom and Brett Favre is Brett Favre is known to kind of draw it up in the dirt. That's who he was as a player on the field. He was not a playbook studying type of guy, so I could understand why it might be a little more difficult and why you might need to put some tricks in there to get him to learn the offense and the terminology. I don't think that's going to be the case for Tom Brady. We saw those clips right there of Tom Brady throwing the ball, and we saw him running, I guess you could call them sprints, something like that. the physical aspect of Tom Brady is what I'd be more concerned about than the mental aspect.
All right, let's talk about a different aging quarterback from one to another. We'll see what Brady does there in a new circumstance. How about Ben Roethlisberger returning to his old circumstance? After watching Roethlisberger throw for 2 days at Heinz Field, Steelers coach Mike Tomlin is pleased with his quarterback's progress following elbow surgery to repair 3 torn tendons. Here's what Tomlin said about Big Ben.
I didn't see anything that was alarming in any way. His velocity is excellent. Maybe his spiral could be a little tighter. I've seen it tighter, but nothing to alarm you in any way. We're going to continue to proceed and proceed appropriately with him in an effort to have him ready to go when we step into a stadium.
So I will admit that yesterday when we first got those quotes from Tomlin, my first thought was, he doesn't seem to be impressed. I've seen the spiral a little tighter. But the good news was we had Ryan Clark, who played for Tomlin for years on the show at the time, and he deciphered exactly what the coach was trying to say.
When Mike Tomlin says that, you know what that says to me? Ben Roethlisberger looks phenomenal because he don't ever give you anything. So for him to have given us that much, Ben Roethlisberger ready to ball.
All right, so I like that very much. And so let's start with that again. And D. Wood, again, I will start with you. You heard the words there. I'm fascinated by how under the radar the Steelers and Roethlisberger seem to be in a lot of people's eyes right now. If Roethlisberger comes back and is close to what we've been accustomed to from him, what are the Steelers in your mind?
They're in a Super Bowl mix in the AFC, Granny. Listen, the Steelers went 8-8 with Doug Hodges. Come on now, like 8-8 with Doug Hodges. Run the show in Pittsburgh. The defense got better last year. And when you get Big Ben Roethlisberger, who's going to definitely bring more to the quarterback position than what they had last year, you got to expect the Pittsburgh Steelers to be right there with the Baltimore Ravens and then obviously contending with the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC. So, yeah, Big Ben, to me, it's definitely a big boost for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
It was Duck Hodges and mostly Mason Rudolph, and they finished 31st in the league in QBR last year. That's second to worst, and they still managed to win 8 games. So, Dominique, if we live in a world And you're a defensive player, and your buddy RC was saying it over and over again yesterday, defense wins championships. Is that still the case? If Roethlisberger is merely good and with a great defense, is that a Super Bowl recipe in 2020?
It doesn't feel like it. It's not what it seems like has been happening in recent Super Bowl history. I always love defense, and I know that defense wins championships, and I do think that that defense is good enough to carry a team deep into the playoffs. But to win a championship, you're going to need your quarterback to make some big plays late in the season. This defense is going to create turnovers. They're going to cause problems, but you can't rely on turnovers. That's one of the more random things. Not all the time are you going to get sack fumbles or get interceptions, tip balls like Micah Fitzpatrick was benefiting from a lot last year. That may not happen. You can play solid D and not set your offense up to win. But the question is, for me, Ben Roethlisberger, late in the season, I'm sure he looks great now. He's had a lot of time off. His elbow is recovering. My question is, what's going to happen late in the season when they're down in important games and they need Ben Roethlisberger at 38 years old? And no disrespect to Ben, but he hasn't really been known as a guy who's kind of taking care of his body to the utmost degree. He's not going to be the same Ben Roethlisberger that can shake off D linemen and throw deep passes in week 16, 17, or deep into the playoffs. I'm not so sure about that. I think he'll be good to start the season, but we'll see how he plays late in the season, especially without the weapons like A.B. and Lev Bell, those type of guys that they can rely on.
Very simply, Mike Tannenbaum, question couldn't be easier. Are the Steelers a legitimate Super Bowl contender in your mind?
Nope, because Ben Roethlisberger's best days are behind him. And you think about 38 years old, made millions of dollars, coming off of major surgery. There's going to be some consequential play where he's going to avoid contact or just want to protect himself. I saw it firsthand, Greeny. I saw it with Vinny Testaverde. I saw it with Brett Favre. I saw it with Jay Cutler of the Dolphins. You get to a point in career, you don't want to get hit like you once did, and you got three young competitive guys in Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield, and Lamar Jackson in that division. I question whether or not when there's that play on the line, is he going to try to run over a defensive player or not? And that's, to me, going to be the difference between maybe them making the playoffs and maybe being the second or third best team in that division.
All right, that's where it all begins this morning. We have a lot of football on the program today. This is my squad here. We also, of course, have the golf going on in San Francisco. You'll be watching it this afternoon, and we'll be talking about Tiger Woods as we continue in a moment here on Get Up. He's three shots off the lead entering round two. Does Tiger have the field right where he wants it? We're talking about that in a moment. And then back to D. Wood. You know, he played for Belichick. He knows what Cam Newton is in for. What advice does he have for the superstar quarterback? You'll hear that and more as we get up with you on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by T-Mobile, America's largest 5G network. By Taco Bell, order ahead and pick up your favorites at our contactless drive-thru. And by Lexus, experience amazing. To the NBA bubble, let's run the floor through some of the other action last night. Damian Lillard went off against the Nuggets, tying his own franchise record with 11 threes. Blazers beat Denver by 10. Lillard, 45 points, 12 assists, second player in NBA history with 10 or more threes and 10 or more assists in a game. James Harden, the only other one to do it. Speaking of Harden, he had himself a game against the Lakers in a game in which LeBron did not play. Harden finished with 39 points, 12 assists, 8 rebounds. Rockets cruised to a 113-97 win. The Rockets currently the number 4 spot in the West. Despite trailing by as many as 23, Giannis and Chris Middleton combined for 66 points. As the Bucks found their rhythm again, Milwaukee went on a 20-0 run late in the fourth, beat the Miami Heat 130-116. Milwaukee clinches the top seed in the Eastern Conference. How about Zion? He scored 24 points, 10 of 12 from the floor, in a game the Pelicans would lose to the Kings. Now, Zion now has 515 points. In reaching the 500-point plateau, he becomes the fastest to get there since Allen Iverson back in the 96-97 season. But that is a bad loss for the Pelicans. And speaking of bad losses, the Sixers' Ben Simmons has a subluxation of his left patella. Happened Wednesday night. He's out considering his treatment options. The subluxation of the patella means the kneecap popped out of place but returned on its own. So that is one to keep a close eye on. In Philly. Meanwhile, tonight from the IMG bubble in Bradenton, Florida, two more WNBA games for you on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. The Liberty take on the Mystics at 7 Eastern, followed by the Sparks and the Aces. And now it is time for Greeny Insists We Talk About Golf, which is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. And that brings us to that man, Tiger Woods, first round PGA Championship outside of San Francisco. Started on the back nine. So the 10th hole is his first hole, and that is his third shot into the par five, leaves that for birdie, which he would make. And so he's off to a good start. To the par four, 13th. We go Tiger with the new putter that he put in the bag this weekend. And, oh, right there, he likes it. From 33 feet, that's another bird. He's two under through four. This is the par four, 18th. 20 feet to save par, and he's got it. So at that juncture, he stayed at one under. And now we go to the par four, fifth. This for bird from 14 feet away. Tiger Woods manages to shoot a two under 68 on a day that he was not as sharp as he'd like to be. Three off the lead, which currently sits at 65. And let's bring in the one, the only, Curtis Strange, who joins us live from Harding Park. And it is great to see you as always. And so, Curtis, let's start with Tiger, because everything starts there. After watching him yesterday, where he didn't have everything going for him, and he still managed to put up a 68 and keep himself right in the middle of it, what are his chances, you think, to make this a very interesting weekend?
I think they're good. They're a whole lot better now than they were, I think, before yesterday, because we just didn't know what he was going to look like physically and how he was going to play. I think when I look back at the overall game yesterday, he looks like, to me, he got the most out of his round. But it looked like the old Tiger. It looked like the Tiger who was a little erratic maybe off the tee, but he scored well. He scored really well. He made some putts. He missed a few short ones. But overall, I think he's pleased, and I think everybody else is pleased.
And the weather yesterday was as advertised, chilly and everything else. And what did you see from his back? Because that obviously is the big concern, that the back tightens up. Didn't seem to be a problem, obviously, yesterday. What did you see yesterday, and what do you expect?
Well, I think the weather has a lot to do with it, and he looked incredibly fit, as he always does, but he looked like he was moving well. You know, he's always moving around and trying to stay loose, but, you know, the back tightens up when you stand around a lot in the middle of the round, toward the end of the round. But he looked really, really good. He looked like through the shots he was moving well. Even some of those tough shots out of the rough where he really had to get down and get to it, he seemed like he stayed down into that really well.
And so yesterday, particularly in the morning, a lot of players shooting low numbers, 11 players in total shooting 66 or better yesterday. If scoring continues like that generally through the weekend, who does that favor? Who do you look at as the favorite now that we've seen one round in the books?
Well, I think, first of all, the weather's going to be consistent. It's going to be calm in the morning with some cover, and then in the afternoon when it dissipates, it's going to get windy like it today and get tougher. But right now, Jason Day is incredibly talented. He's been injury prone for the last 4 or 5 years, but a great talent. He's leading the field. He has a great chance. Former PGA player. Let's not forget about it. This is not the longest golf course in the world. A guy named Zach Johnson, who's a two-time major champion, not the longest out there, but very accurate. On this type of golf course, he has as good a chance as Tiger Woods.
All right, we will see it all coming up today on ESPN Plus and on ESPN this afternoon. Curtis, enjoy it. Thank you very much. We'll see you soon. Again, second round coverage of the 102nd PGA Championship from TPC Harding Park, San Francisco, today, 4 Eastern on ESPN and ESPN Plus, where the coverage actually begins 10 Eastern time this morning. To get ESPN Plus, go to ESPNplus.com or download the ESPN app. Meanwhile, still to come, he's the reigning MVP. But after a huge 2019, we will tell you why 2020 might be Lamar Jackson's most important season yet. That's on the way. This is Get Up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and let's get up and go through the headlines of a busy sports day yesterday. It begins in the NFL. When the opt-out deadline passed at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, 66 players had officially opted out of the season due to the coronavirus pandemic. The Patriots had 8 players. That's by far the most of any team. Only 3 teams had no players opt out: Steelers, Falcons, Chargers. So keep an eye on that. Meanwhile, opt-outs aren't exclusive to the NFL. Penn State linebacker, potential top 10 pick Micah Parsons, has decided to opt out of the college football season to begin preparing for next year's draft. Todd McShay ranks him the 6th best prospect in his top 32 player rankings. To baseball, the red-hot first-place Marlins will play the Phillies 7 times in 5 days as part of baseball's reconfigured schedule released yesterday to account for 21 coronavirus-caused postponements in the first 2 weeks of the season. So that should be a fascinating stretch. And to the National Football League, Lamar Jackson, his season last year won for the ages. Ravens won 14 games. He became the second player in NFL history to win the MVP award unanimously. Still, a lot of people are dwelling on what he hasn't done, especially after losing his first 2 playoff games. And I wanted to sort of pause on that note for a moment here and have a conversation with the crew. Again, for those of you just joining us, Damian Woody, Dominique Foxworth, and Mike Tannenbaum are with me this morning. So those of you who watch the show know that every once in a while I do these essays on the air. Hembo and I put them together, and then I deliver them. And sometimes they get a good deal of attention, sometimes not so much. The one I did on Lamar Jackson earlier this week, guys, got an extraordinary – it felt to me like it really touched a nerve with a lot of people. And I find it really interesting, so I wanted to bring it up here. The basic idea of it was that I keep hearing a lot of questions about Lamar Jackson. I keep hearing more questions at times than it seems we do with any other young quarterback we've ever seen who's accomplished this much, and a continued focus on what he hasn't done, which is to say he obviously has lost his first 2 playoff games. But again, just to recap super quickly, he became the starting quarterback in Baltimore week 11 of his rookie year. And since that time, he's the winningest quarterback in the sport. He's thrown more touchdowns than Tom Brady, fewer picks than Patrick Mahomes, rushed for more yards than Saquon Barkley on 52 fewer carries. So, I mean, the evidence is there. Dominique Foxworth, why is it you believe that so many people continue to question Lamar Jackson and to constantly harp on what he hasn't done rather than what he has?
Yeah, I think it's because a lot of people are wrong about him and they want to be right. So they look for any reason to continue to say that they were right. I personally also don't want to be wrong, and I love being right. So I'm happy to point out that before the draft, I said he was the best quarterback in the draft. And I thought in the right situation, he could be an MVP level player. So I am right, and I will celebrate that. And all the people who are wrong and are reluctant to come around, I think it's because it's in part because they don't want to be wrong, and in part because Lamar Jackson is doing it differently than they're accustomed to seeing it. And they're more prone to see this as an aberration than as a potential special player or a new normal.
I think that's exactly the conclusion that I reached, Damian Woody, was that he is making a lot of people look wrong, look bad. The whole league passed on him. By the way, including his own team once. He was their second first-round pick that year. And a lot of respected evaluators were saying he needs to play a different position in the NFL. The conclusion I reached was, there's nothing so terrible about having been wrong about him. Can you consider that most people were? The problem is you should be willing to say now, oh, yeah, we were wrong, and this guy is special. Why do you think, D. Wood, that people seem hesitant to do it?
Well, Greeny, I think when people watch Lamar Jackson, they think that he's just kind of like this flash in the pan because of his athletic ability. They think that, you know, he's not cerebral. You know, that's the term that kind of gets me frustrated, because you hear it a lot with, you know, the Phillip Rivers, the Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. Those guys are cerebral because they don't have the athletic ability. Well, guess what? When you make the changes, when you make the jumps in statistics that Lamar Jackson has made since he's been in the league, you don't just do that by just your athletic ability alone. You do that also from the neck up, your growth, your football IQ. And I think for me, that's the frustrating part, because I feel like people are doubting Lamar Jackson's cerebral aspect to his game. And I think the more and more he plays and the more and more experience that he gets, he's just going to continue to make people look stupid out here, because guess what? Barring an injury, Lamar Jackson is only going to get better and better.
Yeah, he turned 23 basically a week before the playoff loss this past year. But that's what people keep coming back to. Before I get Mike T in here, Dominique, let me come back to you. People keep – the few people who – well, not few. The people who disagreed with my essay constantly hitting me on the playoffs. Dominique, what should the answer be to "but Greeny, the playoffs"?
Well, I mean, he's been in 2 playoff games in his first 2 seasons. Like, I think – a lot to ask. You could go down the list. And I do remember from your essay, I think you pointed out Peyton Manning potentially had two playoff losses early in his career. Lots of players don't even make it to the playoffs this early in his career. So I think that last year, you can chalk it up to a bunch of bad plays. Their defense had trouble stopping the run. Their receivers were dropping the ball. Lamar wasn't perfect, but I think that's absurd to harp on the playoffs and saying that somehow he's not good enough. The NFL is a special league. It's a different league. And every week, there's only 16 games, maybe 17 games now in the regular season. So those games matter. Teams are playing hard. They're prepared hard. It's not like that's a preseason. Those games matter too, and they had a bye in the first round because Lamar was so special. He'll be good. They'll win some playoff games. He'll likely win a Super Bowl before it's all said and done. Then I don't know what people are going to point to at that point.
Yeah, what you're referencing is that Peyton Manning, as I pointed out, actually went 0 for his first three postseason games. The third one was a 41-0 loss to the Jets in a game in which his team was favored. He completed less than 50% of his passes in those three playoff losses, and the third of them came when he was 26 years old. Lamar is 23. Peyton obviously turned out okay, and I'm not comparing them, and I'm not suggesting Lamar Jackson is going to become Peyton Manning, but I am saying that to hold the postseason against a quarterback who has played a combined total of like 30 NFL games strikes me as insane. Mike Tannenbaum, as you watch Lamar Jackson right now as an evaluator and as one who has to make these decisions, what is it you are watching for?
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
What happens this year, specifically in the division games, because the defensive coordinators of the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Browns, all they did all offseason was saying, what can we do to take away Lamar Jackson's strength? And if he does well playing left-handed, look out. We're talking about a transformational Hall of Fame career. But those three teams, all they did all offseason is, how can we stop Lamar Jackson or take away what he does well? And if Lamar can continue to evolve and play well left-handed, we have something really special. But that's how the NFL evolves. All the teams are saying, we will take away what he does well. We're going to set the edge. And then if he can respond and continue to play well and make progress and continue this historic start, he will be a really good player for a long time.
Yeah, I will admit, as I saw the numbers on this thing just going up and up on social media, I started looking at some of the responses. And one guy started sending me a video about how few comeback wins he has authored. And my response would like to be, he's never behind. They never lose. In order to come from behind to win a game, you have to first be behind. He was 14-2 last year. Damian Woody, how about the questions about his ability to stay healthy? That does feel legitimate to me. He took more hits last season than I believe Cam Newton ever took in any individual season. And while he is a big guy, he's not as big as Cam. How legit are those concerns? Because those to me feel separate from the conversation we're having, and they do feel like a legitimate concern going forward.
Absolutely, because of the style of offense that they run. I mean, this offense is unique, unlike what we've seen in the National Football League. I think Lamar Jackson, you're right, Green, he's not Cam Newton. Anyone that sees Cam Newton, he's an alien. Cam Newton is built more like a defensive end. Lamar Jackson is definitely more slight as a player. So I think, you know, Coach John Harbaugh and company, they had to continue to put in his head, look, be smart when you run the football. Get down when necessary, because he's just too valuable to that Baltimore Ravens team.
Listen, the moral, as I said the other day, is sometimes it's okay to admit you were wrong. Almost everyone was wrong about Lamar Jackson coming in, Dominique Foxworth being the rare exception. All right, let me run the bases here, guys. Let me take you through all the baseball action from yesterday, because it's getting interesting in a lot of different places. And let's start with two-time All-Star catcher JT Realmuto, who got things going for the Phillies with a three-run homer in the first and then clinging to a 5-4 lead in the eighth with a runner at third. Hector Neris, we'll see him here, going to strike out pinch hitter Aaron Judge. Let's work our way to that. This is going to be Hector Neris, and we didn't see it, but the Phillies would hold on to beat the Yankees 5-4. Here's Jose Ramirez leading the Indians to an absolute demolition of in-state rival Cincinnati. First, Ramirez hit a solo home run to right field, batting lefty. Then he capped off a 10-run seventh with a two-run shot to left, batting righty. Homers from both sides of the plate and threw in a triple for good measure. Blue Jays, Braves, good game, bottom nine, tied at three. Nick Markakis, a walk-off home run to right. Braves win 4-3. Markakis' second career walk-off home run. The Braves are now 7-2 at home this year. Fun finish in the Astros and Diamondbacks. Bottom of nine. Astros clinging to a one-run lead thanks to an Alex Bregman two-run homer in the eighth. Cole Calhoun ripped a base hit down the right field line. Two runs would come in to score. Diamondbacks win in walk-off fashion 5-4. How about the Pirates ending their seven-game losing streak in dramatic fashion against the Twins? Bottom of nine, Pirates down 5-4, second and third. Kevin Newman, that's right back up the middle. Two-run score. Pirates take down the Twins by a score of 6-5. As we continue on Get Up This Morning, a war of words has erupted between two of college football's biggest names. You'll hear what Ohio State coach Ryan Day said that should get everyone's attention in Ann Arbor. Don't miss it next. Get Up on ESPN.
Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever. Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
We continue to honor Jim Valvano's fight against cancer with V for Victory, a special celebration of cancer survivors from the sports community, and a look at why cancer research is so critical now more than ever. Tune in Saturday, 2 o'clock Eastern Time on ABC. All right, we're back on Get Up. Cam Newton and Jarrett Stidham are currently listed as co-starters at quarterback on the Patriots' official depth chart. Kyle Love was Cam's teammate in Carolina, and he also played under Belichick in New England. And he had some very strong comments regarding the pairing. We brought these to you yesterday, but I wanted to bring them up again today. This is what he said. He said, this is just my opinion, but I don't feel like Cam can take the pressure of coaches talking down about his play. If he had a bad game in Carolina, the coaching staff wouldn't say much to him because they may have felt he could be a little frail about it or maybe pout. They never really corrected to the point Bill used to correct Tom. My fear is, can Cam fit in their box? Because I want Cam to win. I just hope he can do that within the guidelines of what Bill wants. The reason we wanted to bring this up again today, as Jeff Darlington joins us for the first time this morning, our insider, good morning, Jeff, is D. Wood, I wanted to start with you, because of all of it, we didn't have anyone on the show yesterday who played for Bill Belichick. You did. So we all hear these legendary stories about how he treats everyone the same way and how he would correct Tom Brady as he would anyone else. But you've actually lived it. What can you tell us that is like when Bill Belichick is getting on you?
It's brutal. It's brutal, man. You be in that Wednesday morning meeting and, man, he will undress anybody. It doesn't matter. Tom Brady, you know, I was there with Tom Brady, with you know, Teddy Bruschi, myself, Willie McGinnis, didn't matter. He would have clips of everybody just, you know, saying, what the hell are you doing? Just cussing you out, all types of things, man. And that was really the first thing I said when I saw the Cam Newton signing with New England. Is he going to humble himself? Can he take criticism? Because the one thing about Bill, no one's bigger than the team. Doesn't matter if you're the quarterback or the 53rd man on the roster. You're going to have to be able to humble yourself and take it. And that's the question I have with Cam Newton. If he can do that, I think he'll be all right, because I think Cam feels disrespected and he feels hungry, you know, going into the season. But that's going to be a big factor.
I have a second question on that, and that is, you played in a variety of different places for a variety of different coaches. Is Belichick unique in that, which is to say, was his breakdown and his criticism of players, including high-profile ones, different than any other coach you played for?
Yes. Yes. I mean, and Dominique will probably speak to this. Yeah. I mean, it's not many organizations. One thing about quarterbacks, you know, their psyche is sensitive. And so a lot of coaches will be hesitant to question or really undress a quarterback in a team environment. That wasn't the case with Bill. Bill didn't care because, again, it was all about the team. No one player is above the team. So that's what Cam Newton's going to have to deal with.
And, Jeff, I know you have something you could add here as well, specific to Cam.
Well, yeah, I actually remember covering him very early in his career, one of the first two seasons that I was in the locker room, and Greg Olsen, after a loss, Cam was in his locker doing his kind of notorious, pout, where he kind of sits in the locker for quite a while. Greg Olsen comes over and puts his arm on Cam's shoulder to kind of give him some console him a little bit. And Cam just throws Greg's arm off of him and just like scowls. And everybody in the room was like, whoa. And that was sort of an indication of what was to come with Cam. He's a great winner, but when he loses, he takes it harder than anybody I've ever seen in the NFL. And you might say, hey, that's a good thing, right? Competitive spirit. But I do think that it is worthy of our attention when it comes to Belichick and how Cam responds to that. Ron Rivera, Pete Carroll, those types of coaches are very different than, say, someone like Bill Belichick. How will that mesh? We'll have to find out. But Cam, throughout his career, has not been very good when it comes to those moments, those tough moments. So I think Kyle's points are actually pretty valid.
So Dominique, I guess I do come back to you, having heard this from D. Wood and this from Jeff, which we didn't have yesterday. I wonder, how legitimate a concern do you believe that is? Just the mix between Cam and his personality and Belichick.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a concern. It's not something that we should completely brush off, but I think the important thing is to understand that Cam is a logical, rational person, and he knows the point where he is in his career right now is a point where he has to be humble and he has to take this coaching. It's not that Belichick is unique in that he criticizes his top players, because I think that all coaches do it. What sounds unique is the way in which he does it, and I'm not so sure that if Belichick wants to win and if he believes that Cam can't take it, he may not need to adjust his style a little bit, but I personally think Cam should be able to take it. We talked about it yesterday. Cam Newton, from the time he was a little boy, his father, Cecil Newton, was very, very hard on him. He coached him very hard. Cam's been forced to humble himself a number of times when he had to go play at Blinn Junior College after he left Florida. Cam is not a person who looks to me like someone, he doesn't seem to me like someone who can't take a little bit of criticism and some hard coaching and maybe even a bad word or two. I think Cam will be all right.
Final quick thought
here. Greedy.
Yeah, go ahead, D-Wood.
Greedy, listen, Cam Newton, when this whole thing was going down, Cam Newton had probably already did his homework about how the environment was in New England anyway. It's not like he's walking into something where he doesn't know this is coming. Knows this is coming. And I think Cam Newton also knows that he's going to get the best coaching that he's ever gotten in his career. So he should be excited about it.
Yeah, it is worth reminding everyone. He wasn't traded there. He chose to go there. So he knew what he was getting. He may not have had a lot of other options, but when you look at what he wound up signing for financially, there may have been other places that would have given him that. So he went to play for Belichick willingly. Let's see how that plays out. Meanwhile, I've been waiting all morning long to get you to this. The Ohio State-Michigan rivalry is already testy, and this season hasn't even started. During a conference call this week, Jim Harbaugh reportedly interrupted Ryan Day and questioned him on a photo of an assistant coach working with linebackers, which is against the COVID protocol. Day, then in a team meeting, reportedly wondered aloud whether or not the Big Ten should implement a mercy rule because they were going to hang 100 on Michigan. I'm here for all of this. And I have a feeling so is Paul Feinbaum, who joins us. Paul, as I read those words, what thoughts go through your mind?
Well, it, to me, it feels like college football season is almost here, Greeny, and that's the first time I can make that statement in about a year. You have to applaud Jim Harbaugh. It doesn't matter how many times he gets sand kicked in his face, he gets sucker punched, he gets eviscerated on the field, he keeps coming back for more, and I've never seen anyone quite like that. So for that, I admire Harbaugh, but Ryan Day, remember, this is only his second year taking over for Urban Meyer, and he's acting like Nick Saban. It's amazing.
How about you, Dominique? As you hear this stuff as a former player, what thoughts go through your mind?
Oh, man, I love it. I think that's the type of stuff that gets guys excited. It'll make this game more exciting as if it needed any even more hype. But I do think that if Harbaugh is being accurate, that he thinks that someone is violating the COVID protocols, then he's doing the right thing. He's calling them out. He's protecting the players at Ohio State and the players at Michigan by doing that. But who cares whether it's true or false? Just the fact that they're talking trash right now is really what's exciting to me. And I do believe Ryan Day is actually going to try to get to 99 at least on Jim Harbaugh.
Well, you remember the legendary old line between Shem Beckler and Woody Hayes when they were the legendary coaches in this rivalry. And Woody Hayes went for two late in the game, and they asked him why. And he said, because they don't allow you to go for three. So that's the history, Paul, that we're dealing here. And so maybe we're getting a little bit of it. I'll remind you, this is not the last game of the season this year. They're playing October 24th. Paul, you'll love this. I brought this up to Jalen Rose the other day, and I'll give you one guess how Jalen responded. Here's what he said.
We're going to get a win this year. That's right. I said it. Save this footage. Michigan will beat the Buckeyes in football this year.
That's the mayor of Ann Arbor, Jalen Rose, talking. Paul Feinbaum, your response.
I mean, I can't. I mean, Greeny, this isn't even fun anymore. I mean, I know. I mean, everyone wants to dominate the opposition, but I mean, Jalen's about 10 feet taller than I am, but I feel like I've just battered him into submission every time we have this conversation. I mean, I'm not going to say, does Jalen understand the definition of insanity is saying and doing the same thing over and over again with the same result? Because, I mean, he's a fan. He's one of the most influential alums in that school's history and on the sports field and often. Why not keep cheering for the Big Blue? And he's still going to get the same result. Michigan is going down badly, Jalen. I mean, I don't know if they'll lose by 50, but it'll be close.
Okay. Meantime, Paul, I have not heard this, but I've been told that this is going to be very entertaining. You had Will Muschamp on your radio show yesterday, and I'm told that he offered some very interesting advice for his players. Neek, we're going to like this. Let's play Muschamp.
You need to lead a very boring life right now. I probably look back to your high school days and your college days. Yeah, I couldn't imagine you had many dates. And that's the way our guys need to lead their lives right now. They need to lead their lives like Paul Feinbaum did in college.
Never had one.
Paul, this is on your own show, Paul. How are you allowing this?
I mean, it was definitely the line of the year. And you know, this is when I'm supposed to argue that I had a lot of dates, but I never had a date in high school or college. So he was right.
Yes. I mean, all of you guys, Neek, all of you superstar athletes and everything like that. This is Paul Feinbaum in high school. I believe that's a high school photo. I know we have his high school graduation photo. This is a young Paul Feinbaum. Now, Dominique, if I had just put that picture on the screen, oh, there it is. That's the high school yearbook photo. The choice of neckwear is fascinating. As I take a close look at that, Paul. But Neek, like if you were to have gotten this yearbook and it said underneath it, you know, this person, that face is most likely to what? What do you think, Dominique, would have been the end of that sentence? Neek? I think we've lost Neek. I get this. You know what? I think that the picture so shocked him that it threw him off completely. Paul, your reaction.
I mean, I would have thought most likely to be a Hollywood model or film star. I mean, Greeny, let's be honest. I mean, I can't say much about my appearance today, but at 16 or 17, I was holding it pretty well. I mean, that was really good hair for the era.
I don't disagree with that at all. And you know what? You know what it should have said under it? We'll go on to become one of the most significant television stars in America. That's what it should say. No one looks forward to high school reunions more than Paul Feinbaum. I'll tell you that. Neek, you got me back again? Go ahead.
I got you. He said he looked like a film star?
Yes.
What kind of films are you talking about? With that hair and that jacket and that tie, well, I feel like, I don't know if those are PG Disney films that you're talking about.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there in the interest of still having a show when we come back off the top of the next hour. So let's move on and tell you that coming up, you would think it would all come easy for a man who has won 6 Super Bowls. Tom Brady says, not so fast. We'll tell you what the biggest challenge is for Tampa Tom as we continue next. Get up on ESPN.